Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
We continue on a Monday morning, and I talked about it a little bit ago, but one of the things that I've concluded in doing post-traumatic weighing and how to function under a lot of pressure is, whether it's post-traumatic stress or just life stress, is you got to have a release valve. And so whenever I do post-traumatic weighing, I always say, if you'd have told me that 10 years ago, if you'd have told me 10 years ago that I'd be talking about teaching Marines how to meditate, I'd have said, you're crazy. So joining me is a captain of the Marine Corps who I met on Friday, and his name is Chris Drake. And so, Chris, you're sitting in the audience, and I say that if you'd have told me 10 years ago I'd be talking about teaching Marines how to meditate, what did you think?
I kind of agree with you. when I first started my career out, it's certainly something that that I wasn't doing and never really thought I would do. So it's an interesting journey on how to get there. But no, I was excited that you brought it up.
All right. First of all, welcome to All Marine Radio. Thanks for doing this.
I appreciate you having me.
All right. Chris is a captain. He's just finishing up at the Expeditionary Warfare School where Mike Musselman and I did our post-traumatic winning thing on Friday, and met him after the class, and he talked about writing about a piece about a paper about teaching Marines to meditate. So I said, hey man, we need to talk. And so before we talk about that, Chris, let's talk about you. Born and raised where?
Alton, Illinois, Southern Illinois, on the east side of the Mississippi, across from St. Louis.
Alton, Illinois.
And yes, sir.
That's on the banks of the Mississippi, yes?
It is.
Holy smokes. You grew up on the banks of the Mississippi, and where did you go to college?
I went to the University of Illinois in Champaign, so a couple hours north of there.
That's the big one, right? There's a couple
of them. That's the big one. That's the big school in Illinois. Yeah, Big Ten.
Right. Why do you guys' athletic team suck so much, man? For a big school, like with Chicago right there, like what's the problem?
I don't know what has happened over the last decade or so, but when I was my freshman year there, the football team went to the Rose Bowl.
Right.
And I got to see that, and then after that they kind of fell off. The basketball team hasn't been doing well since the early 2000s, so. I don't know. I've kind of lost touch with them, honestly.
Well, all right. When they get good, you'll get back in touch with them, I assume.
Yeah, total bandwagon.
There you go. Like everybody else. What? Yep. How does the Marine Corps get on your radar growing up?
So I had a little bit of exposure to it. My father was a Marine. He did a very short enlistment when there were two-year enlistments during the Vietnam War, in the late 60s, early 70s. And so I just from speaking with him, knew a little bit about it, but never really had any intentions in joining or enlisting. Once I started college, I kind of was going down a path towards, a degree in engineering or architecture and realized that math was not my forte. So started looking around at other career fields and, started understanding what the officer route was and how to get a commission and, ended up starting to talk to the officer selection office and the NROTC instructors there and just kind of went from there. So I just always had a desire to do that. And once I learned a little bit more about it and understood there was a challenge and kind of had a sense of patriotism, it kind of seemed like the right fit.
All right. So what year do you join the Marine Corps?
I commissioned in May 2011.
All right, so in May 2011, you're commissioned, and then and so what do you become in the Marine Corps? What's your MOS?
So I started out as a communications officer, did school in Quantico there, and then Went on the 29 Palms with 3rd Battalion, 11th Marines, and then finished out with a small tour with 7th Marines there. And then went across country to MAR 4 Cyber, which is kind of a new thing up in Fort Meade, Maryland. And after spending a couple of years with them, did a deployment actually as an augment out of MAR 4 Cyber. And right around that time, they released the new cyberspace occupational field. So one of the bumper crop of the new 1702 cyberspace officers as of October of 2018.
So you're like cyberspace man? Do you now? Is there like a special uniform? Do you get? Is there like a Star Trek version of your uniform?
Not yet. No, we'll see what happens.
But you know, by the time the geeks get a hold, tell me the geeks are like waiting, and you're like the coolest space guy because you're like cyberspace guy. That's like crazy.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it's a interesting. Interesting field. It's still getting built, and there's a lot happening and a lot changing there. So it's great to be a part of kind of the ground floor there. So we'll see how it goes. I'm excited about it.
Are you constantly, when you bring us up, or do the Trekkies just seize on you? Like, dude, I want to talk to you. I need to talk to you.
Yeah. So I got the opportunity to go over to the basic school, and they do the MOS mixers over there, and I think it was the first time they brought anybody that was a 1702 over, so I got to speak with some of the lieutenants there, and you'd be surprised. I mean, it's, you know, Marines are especially young Marine officers like that are pretty in shape guys and in athletics, so you get a whole mix of people that are interested in that stuff. I'm not particularly good at it by any means. I just happen, this is just in the right place at the right time, so that's why I'm doing it.
All right. Since it's such an embryonic thing, I don't even know anything about cyber ops in space. But so I want to ask you about cyber operations in general, because I've been curious, and I've never had a cyber dude on the program. How does it work in theater? How does a unit, and telling us what you can, of course, how does a unit do cyber operations, because aren't they controlled at a much higher level? How does a supporting unit, like, are they doing their own cyber thing, or is it like it doesn't exist below the MEF level, the core level? Can you explain how it lays down?
Absolutely. No, that's a great question. And luckily I had firsthand experience with that on my deployment. So I deployed with a special operations unit as basically a liaison officer is kind of the best way to put it. And,
okay.
You're exactly right. The capabilities and the authorities all exist at a much higher level than, even the MEF level. We're talking at the COCOM level or, national level. So,
right.
As a liaison, understanding the capabilities and knowing who the right people to talk to and how to request effects, you talk back to the stateside guys who are able to provide that for you. And really it's kind of a lot like fires. It's, they're looking for an effect. And you know who to talk to, what buttons to push. So you just call back and route the request for support and, hopefully somebody will pick it up for you.
All right. Well, that, you know what? Now, once you say it's a lot like fires, the rest of us dopes, we can understand. But fires, control of fires held at a much higher level.
Absolutely, yes. And
I wonder about that.
Yeah, it's not as responsive either. But if the approvals, depending on what you're doing and what you're trying to do, if the approvals already exist, there are some more mature capabilities that you can get a little bit more quickly. Depending on what you're trying to do.
Got it. So, so that was the discussion that, that we were talking about. It's like, I remember General Zinni years ago talking, like, everybody can't have their own deception plan, right?
Right.
Because what happens if at Austerlitz, the guy that wasn't in the fog wanted the dude that was looking at him to think he was in the fog? That would have screwed up Napoleon's plan there. Which you start thinking about cyber and how it works and who controls it. You're like, well, I don't really understand it. Now, So explain one more thing to me. I read something that said that Marines, cyber ops ultimately will be organized the way Special Operations Command is, and that, you know, while you may have Marines that do cyber, they do them, you know, at Cybercom and not like at not at the MEF. Is that how this is that the direction this ultimately is headed, you know, in? Because it's held, the control of that is held at such a high level that, you know, the disperse, it's not something that we disperse and give everybody, you know, two machine guns and a small.
Sure. So right now they're looking, it's kind of a, I guess there's two different ways of looking at it. The actual individuals, the individual Marines who will be conducting the operations will be kind of at that higher level. However, there will be Marines that are like myself and others that are trained and understand the capabilities with the MEFs, the new MIGs that they're standing up.
Right. Explain to everybody who doesn't know what a MIG is.
So it's Meth Information Group.
It's not a Russian fighter, okay?
No, it is not the same. So the Meth Information Group is it's basically like MHG, just with some additional capabilities. So they took kind of that MHG construct, the Meth Headquarters Group, and gave them some additional capability providers and subject matter experts like cyber, the PsyOps new MOS that they're building, and then your Intel MOSs, things like that are going to be part of the MIG. And so they will have cyberspace planners, I believe a 1702 major is what the build is looking at, and I believe some enlisted Marines is there as well, who are capable of providing that planning support, like I was saying, like you would do in a forward environment. And they're also looking at putting on some manpower at each MU, actually. And I have some buddies that are going to be the going out as kind of the bumper crop with the MUs here shortly. So should be
interesting. So again, it's just like, if we think of it as dopes, if we think of it as fires guys, so you have the planners and the liaison people with the operational units that are essentially can conceive the architects or the architects of something and say, okay, at this time we want to have this effect, and then they go through the process of getting that cleared. That's what these people are doing.
Correct. Yep, that's the best way to look at it. Kind of like and I'm not sure how they will integrate at the MEF, but kind of like the FEC, the Fires and Effects Coordination Cell that they're experimenting with at the different MEFs. I think they will either be integrated tightly in there or are a part of it, or have a process very similar to it.
Interesting. All right, anything else before we leave that subject and get our meditation on about that, something that you would tell people that is important to understand that I haven't been smart enough to ask you?
No, I think you asked some good questions. I would just say
that was a trick question, by the way. That was the right answer, just so you know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, if anybody's interested in it, don't hesitate to ask. It's a new field. It's growing, and I think from the way things have been going, it looks like it's going to be a focus of effort for some time. So definitely ask, and don't let them sit back there in the closet by themselves, like they might do if you don't ask the questions.
Yeah, we know who those little weirdo cyber dudes are, so we got to keep yanking them out and
uh-huh.
Exactly, making them normal people. So let's talk about meditation. So you're a student at EWS. How does this issue even get in front of you? Because after the thing, or maybe it was at a break, Chris walks up to me. And he introduced himself, and we start talking, and he tells me that he's written a paper, and I think he said, would you like to read it? I said, not only would I like to read it, I'd like to put it up on the website. So you'll find it on the website right now. If you go to Post-Traumatic Winning, if you click on resources, you'll see under white lettering, I think it says other resources, you'll see paper, and then you'll see the title, and you'll see Chris's name, and you can click on it, and you can read it. Has it been published in the Marine Corps Gazette yet?
It has not. I know it's being considered for it.
That bastard Woodbridge. I'll yoke him up. Don't worry about that.
What's that?
That bastard Chris Woodbridge. I'll yoke him up. I know him.
Okay.
I'll say, why are you screwing my boy over? So the only place you can read it exclusively right here on the Almarine Radio website. So how did the idea come to you? How did it darken your doorstep? Talk to me. Where did this come
from?
Sure.
So as part of the Expeditionary Warfare School, there's we have to write an argumentative research paper, and kind of the guidelines are it has to be service related. Typically, Marines will write about their MOS specific and an issue that's going on, and basically raise an issue and say do some research on it and say here's my proposal on how to fix it. And I actually started to write on the cyberspace MOS and kind of some integration with the SIGINT community, how we might be able to make that better. And not only did I find it difficult to stay within classification levels just through research and even starting to write something, I realized that, you know, I just wasn't as passionate about it as some other subjects. So I started thinking what really interests me. And over the last 3 to 4 years, I've really been getting into meditation and see it work in my own life. So it was kind of an easy transition for me.
Well, okay. So talk to us. How do you, how did that darken your doorstep? I mean, for a lot of us, we don't discover that, or maybe it's probably more common than it used to be. So how did you get there?
Yeah. So I was trying to think back before this conversation on when the first time I even, realized that, you know, what the source was that was the catalyst for me to start doing it. And I don't know if it was reading articles or listening to podcasts, but, I started out, listening to a guided meditation podcast, and, a woman named Tara Brock here. I think she's around in the DC area. And, yeah, I enjoyed it and I would do it off and on, never very consistent. And then, the more I started to read and listen to different podcasts, the workout programming that I follow, they also do a podcast and they talk a lot about, meditation and mindfulness for not only just for, you know, the mental state, but also the physical effects and the physical benefits it has. So kind of all these different sources were kind of coming together at once, and kind of showing me all the benefits. And it was something I had kind of dabbled in, and then I really just kind of jumped all in once everything started coming together like that.
So was there no reason you just did it for the heck of it? Other than that it was just something you wanted to do. So you weren't driven by any kind of trauma in your life or anything like that?
There was nothing specific at the time that I felt like I needed to do it for. I think it was just, I've been, my father owned a gym, growing up. So I've been kind of around fitness my whole life. And, I've always been into trying new nutrition fads and diets and things like that. And, so when I read about this and some of the possible benefits, I kind of just decided to give it a try. And, so at the beginning, no, there wasn't anything specific that I was doing it for. It wasn't, it wasn't like a diagnosis and I thought that this might help.
Right,
and,
right.
But as time went on, I certainly, any, you know, different things in your life pop up. It absolutely played a pretty crucial role.
All right. So let's talk about, tell us about your paper and how you, tell me your argument. Why do you think this is a good thing?
Yeah, so I took a little bit of a different approach with the paper. Most of the research that you'll find out there with military, active duty and veterans is focused on PTSD kind of research and how this can help them. And you can find tons of peer-reviewed articles out there that give you the benefits and how it's really helped people. And that's great. And, I hope that continues, but I wanted to also, kind of reach the, you know, especially with the war, not as many people are deploying anymore. And right. like you talked in your class, you know, the suicide rate for, I think you said the last year, 83% were Marines that, you know, had never heard a shot fired in anger. So I kind of wanted to reach a different audience in those that, you know, were otherwise healthy or not experiencing symptoms like that. Now after your class, I realized that, you know, I could probably even rewrite it again to focus more on just, you know, trauma outside of combat related stress. But the focus I took was how meditation, can the physiological benefits from it that can make you a better warfighter, I guess, at the end of the day. That was kind of my main focus.
So, let's talk about it. How, first of all, one of the things I say in my class is we got to find a different name. Because meditation is like, so we have to call it something like combat mind clearing or combat cranial preparation. What are you doing? CCP, sir. All right, carry on. I thought you were meditating there for a second. Oh, no, sir, I'm not. You know better than that. So we have to find a different name. To get over the stigma of the whole thing, but talk to me. How would you go about? Because I put up pictures of LeBron James, Michael Jordan, and I quote, you know Michael Jordan, and I mean those guys are moderately good at what they do. and they do it under tremendous pressure, and
right.
So if that's how you clear your head. And the issue with Marines is, like, you can't take your horse on deployment if that's what, you know, if that's where you go to be peaceful. The horse can't go with you. Meditation goes everywhere. So talk to me about the case you make on what we do and how do we do it? Where do we teach it? How do we make this go?
Yeah, so that was the stigma behind it was a big, something that I wanted to address in the paper, too. And, I could probably – again, write another paper just on that. But I think finding a different way to you know, a different term for it would help in kind of the branding of it. But I also just think showing examples of, people that have kind of been there, done that, and have seen the benefits from meditation. And, like, the special operations community, it's huge. I mean, those guys are deploying all the time. And, you know, with all of the, you know, they get a lot of publicity, and so I think that young Marines kind of, you know, might look up to that community. So just giving them real life examples of these guys that have been through a lot and you know are man enough to do something like meditation and not be worried about what the perception is. But so I think that's one possible way to do it, just to get over the stigma. But as far as the implementation, in the paper, what I argued for was the Force Fitness Instructor program, which is a relatively new program that the Commandant launched. And they are sending Marines down to Quantico, and it's designed to be down at the company and battery level that a Marine is trained as a Force Fitness Instructor. And so my argument was that, you know, they bring these Marines down here to get trained and just for a week at a time or throughout the course that they're going through, I believe it's about a 4-week course, they teach them some basic meditation practices and give them the resources that they can take back to those Marines. I don't know if that's the perfect method for implementation, but I certainly think that would be a start, getting guys that are already, you know, going to be leaders within their battalions and squadrons for physical fitness and teaching them these skills. They will have a captive audience when they go back and teach the Marines. So that was my approach to how we could possibly implement it.
Through the Force Fitness Program?
Correct, yes.
The interesting. The no, I mean, I think, and it's absolutely appropriate because I think, you know, that most Marines would find benefit from it when you do it with them. And you say, all right, just close your eyes. Take 5 deep breaths through your nose, right? Hold each one for 20 seconds and then breathe and clear your mind. And at the end of it, you just say something like, I saw a friend of ours, Josh Goldberg, do that. And he said, okay, now, if I asked you, do you feel more relaxed, what would you say?
Yeah.
And it's interesting that they all say yes.
Right.
All right. Is that something that you could use as in your kit of warfighting tools to be a better warfighter? And the answer is, and I think the answer is undoubtedly yes.
Yeah, I completely agree. And what's interesting is kind of the, as I was doing the research on the paper, the most interesting thing that I found was that there had actually been a study conducted on two infantry battalions out of Camp Pendleton. It doesn't name the battalions, but I think it was 2011 the study began, and it was the University of, I think it was UC San Diego, and then a professor out of Georgetown University here on the East Coast partnered together, on the East Coast, partnered together and to do a study on Marines. And across the board, they did the whole scientific research, scientific method, and had control groups, everything like that. And across the board, the Marines that were put through the actual meditation courses for 8 weeks had marked improvements over the Marines that didn't. And it wasn't, they did give them a questionnaire kind of with, and asked them, you know, how they were feeling after, certain training events and things like that. And all of them responded, you know, it was helping them out, but they also did biomarkers as well. So they had sensors on them, brain activity and heart rate. And it showed that, after a mount-like scenario, they put them through a mount scenario and, had role players and everything. And, I think they were probably using blanks or something like that, but they monitored their heart rate and their respiratory rate and saw that they recovered, I think it was up to 2 times quicker than, the guys that hadn't gone through that. And it's just kind of a testament to, once you teach somebody that, they understand, like, hey, it becomes subconscious. And if you go through a stressful situation and your body goes into that sympathetic state, and just breathing and kind of focusing on the moment brings you back down and allows you to transition much quicker into whatever you need to be doing.
The interesting. So let's talk about this. When we talk about meditation, Chris, and my guest is Captain Chris Drake, United States Marine Corps. He's a, get this, everybody, cyberspace dude, all right? So, exactly. This should be Star Trek music playing in the background. Maybe I can dig that up. But, come on, you know you got to get it fed to you, bud. So, talk to me about when you're thinking of meditation, describe what you mean.
Yeah, so I think the in the paper and for me and I know for those Marines in the study that I just mentioned, mindfulness meditation is the primary focus, and it's not anything too crazy and nothing way off the deep end hippie stuff. It's just sitting there and focusing on your breath and trying to clear your thoughts. So sitting there and breathing, whether you do breath counts or just focus on the rise and fall of your chest or your stomach, and you can do it for as little as 5 minutes, and you can do it for really as long as you want. And the design is that you stay present and you stay mindful, and you're not letting thoughts that are often, you know, coming from a place of anxiety creep into your mind, whether it's future thoughts or past thoughts. And you're always, you know, the brain is constantly moving, trying to keep you alive, really. And you're just trying to fight against those survival mechanisms to realize that you don't need to be in fight or flight mode all the time.
So walk us through, if you were going to coach somebody through meditating, how do they do it?
Yeah, so I think the simplest way, and one way that works for me kind of in all situations is they call it box breathing. And you can do it with different counts, but you take a four count in-breath, you do a four count hold, you do a four count out-breath, and then another four count hold, and you repeat it. So, like, if you drew that out on a piece of paper, it would look like a box. They call that box breathing. So that's what I would tell people to start with, is just that. You know, if you, whether it's just in the middle of the day or you're sensing a stressful situation, whatever, just take a second and don't even need to close your eyes. Nobody knows you're doing it either, and it's very helpful. Like, if you're about to go in and deliver a brief or something, just do that for a couple minutes, and you know, it can kind of recenter you and get you focused. So that would be the first way. And then if if you find that helpful, I would just start diving into the resources. There's a ton of podcasts. There's all sorts of stuff online. There's too much almost. Once somebody's hooked, there's plenty of great resources.
All right. And you're saying, okay, look, you can do this on the down low. Yes.
Correct. Absolutely.
Nobody even has to know. So we're meditating in the closet. Is that what we're doing?
No, not at all. I mean, I've done it before where I've been in a meeting, with the commanding officer, or whatever, and it's, whether it's just I want to clear my mind or, I'm getting ready to brief and I want to make sure that I'm ready to go, you can sit there and do it. And, you don't need to close your eyes or anything, but you can do it sitting at your desk. You can do it wherever, riding in the Humvee, on a patrol.
Talk to me about, so when people say, for instance, I was watching a video and somebody was saying, like, I meditate, 15 to 20 minutes every day. It's where I start my day. It helps me, like, take on the day the way I want to take it on, blah, 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 blah. Bottom line, I'm asking this. There's no hard and fast rules. If you can meditate and have some kind of device that in 60 seconds helps calm your brain down and clear it, there is no dogmatic answer to that question, yes?
Correct. Yeah, no. There's plenty of things that people will say and suggestions on how long to do it, but just like anything else, it's a practice, and I think that's key, is understanding that it's a breathing practice or meditation practice, whatever you want to call it, and it's something that you work on every day. So, just like you would practice a sport or an instrument or whatever your passion is, even if you can get in just a few minutes of practice every day, you're going to do it because it's going to make you better. So that's kind of the same line of thinking I take when I approach meditation. Ideally for me, 20 minutes seems to work for me, and so I'll try to hit that mark every morning. But if it's just 1 or 2 minutes, and just to keep you in that habit of doing it, it's absolutely worth it.
And how do you know when you're done? Is it, do you do it by time, or do you do it? Is there a certain place that you want to go relative to your meditation? What governs that?
So for me, and I'm still, I'm still working on this a lot too, and I'm sure my answer will be different a month from now and then a few years from now. But right now, I kind of cut it off when I realized that, I've completely, completely lost it, or when I just kind of feel like I've accomplished what I wanted to, kind of cleared my thoughts. So.
Okay, so let me. One of the things that happens as a novice meditation person is your mind wanders. You find yourself thinking about your life and about things, which is an indication that you're not in that quiet place, that calm place anymore. Is that yes or no to that?
Absolutely, yeah. And that's the point. That's the great thing. And a lot of people say, I can't meditate because, my mind wanders. And that's the point. Because you said it, actually, is you realize that your thoughts have wandered to that place. So that's the point. It's the realization. It's not that you can sit there quiet for, 5, 10, 20 minutes. It's that your mind will wander, just because we're biologically wired to do that. And when you realize that and can bring yourself back, whether even if it's just for a moment, to your breath or whatever it is that you're focusing on, that's the goal. And, it can be frustrating, but the point is not to get frustrated with yourself and, when your mind does wander, because it will do that. And that's the whole point.
Got it. So, so are there tips or things that you can do? So I start doing the breathing thing, and how do you actually clear your mind?
Eventually on the days, so there's some days where it works, and then there's some days where, I'm really struggling, and it just depends. It's that realization of, my mind is wandering, I'm thinking about whatever it is that's on my mind, okay, good or bad.
Right.
And just going back to that breath. And then eventually after time, you'll realize that, you know, a lot more time passes when you're just focused on that breath and your mind hasn't wandered. And you enter into a kind of a state where, you know, time just goes and you're not conscious of it. And I think that's kind of a measure of when you've realized that you're at a pretty good spot with it, is when you can hit that point where you time just passes without your conscious awareness.
Okay. So if you're a novice and you've never done this and you've heard about it and you're a Marine, and I will tell you this, we have a lot of our own shit that we deal with, okay? I talk about it in post-traumatic winning. Grandpa went to World War II. He doesn't talk about it. You know, Uncle Bob went to Vietnam. He doesn't talk about it. So I guess that's how you deal with that. So we put ourselves in our own prison. So if it wasn't, like I said, if it wasn't called meditation, if it was called cross-mind, right? So we have CrossFit. Now we're going, what are you doing? I'm doing cross-mind right now. Whoa, how do I do that? All right, sit down and be really quiet. Focus on your breath. We're going to do cross mind. So if we call it cross, that's a good name. I just named it right there.
You might make millions with that.
Exactly. but you know, that's how stupid it is. So, you know, we come home, we isolate ourselves from our spouse. We desperately need to talk, but we say, I can't go there with you because I love you. I'm going to be over here and not crazy and be isolated. I'm going to push you over there. And that's how this is going to work, and that's going to work out well for everybody. That's wrong. Okay, just for everybody. And we do the same thing with this. Here is a time-honored mental health, mental wellness practice that we would reject out of hand. A lot of us would reject it out of hand because we don't meditate. Why? Because mm-hmm. we're macho tough guys. So yep. If I told you that you would be a more effective fighter, If you could clear your brain, and another reason to get involved in it is because it is, right, it is expeditionary. It goes wherever you go. You think you'd be up for doing cross mind? And I think everybody's answer would be, yeah, I would be.
Of course. No, I completely agree. It kind of sells itself, and I think we just, especially with your course, once people start opening up to that idea that, you know, we can talk about mental health and mental wellness and, you know, get past the stigma and the stereotypes. I mean, even when I wrote the paper in my own course, you know, with my own peers who I'd been close with for months at that point and some who I'd known for years, you know, they still kind of look at you funny when you tell them that you're going to write a paper about meditation. And so I think it will take time, and it's just, you know, it's, you gotta show, you can't necessarily preach to people either. And I think you just have to show them by example. And so raising awareness for it and then letting people come to you kind of like you have, with this station, you know, after your classes, you have, you know, tons of Marines coming up to you like myself that want to talk to you. And, so just getting awareness for stuff like this and, you know, I think the Marines will come to it if you give them the opportunity.
All right. No, and I think that's why the Force Fitness thing, once we change it to cross-mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? If we really want to sell it, we'll call it Cyber Cross-Mind.
What? There you go.
What? Yeah. You can't do this because you're not smart enough because you're a grunt. I can too. Okay, sit down. Sit down and shut up, all right, and breathe. Interesting. No, that's why, you know, when all of a sudden the Force Fitness instructor is doing it, and you're not, it's like, it's mind clearing, right? It's the Vulcan mind clearing. And, you know, why wouldn't we be doing it? Because it is good for you. All right. What haven't I been smart enough to ask you about meditation, that you would tell people, hey, check this out. As long as we're on the subject, what haven't I been smart enough to ask you?
I think we've covered most of the major topics. You know, like I said, there's tons of resources out there that that you can go and find and
so just start reading and watching videos and it's not that, you know, you can, there's a ton of information out there obviously, so just get on there and check it out and follow it and work with it and start asking questions.
Yeah, I think that's a good approach. I mean, kind of discovery, learning, and you have to be passionate about it, and you have to care. And I think if you care enough about your own mental wellness and mental health to look into other things or you know medication or you know whatever else it is that you do, you're probably passionate enough to do a quick Google search or look up a podcast. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's how you start, just by looking into it. That's how I started. And certainly reaching out to somebody that you know that does it or that knows something about it. I think that's a great place to start. But yeah, I mean, it's especially with this day and age, I think with the generation that's coming up and it's more health conscious, I think that it will continue to be in the mainstream, and I mean, there's just so many success stories with it too. And you look at, you know, whether it's business leaders or athletes, like you've mentioned before, there's, you know, they're all doing it, so it's working for them. And if we want to get better, and we often look to successful people, and why not them?
What is it? Something like 95% of the Fortune 500 CEOs meditate. Is that? I mean, is there some kind of crazy statistic like that out there?
There is. Yeah. It is. I don't know the exact numbers, but right. I know that it's high, and I know that athletes are doing it a lot too. And maybe it's the culture and kind of the machismo that we look back at our past leaders and. You know, it wasn't a part of the culture or anything then, and maybe as we start to integrate this and get it going and brains look back, you know, at leaders from this generation, they'll know that they also kind of did these practices as well, and maybe it'll just become part of the job.
Well, you know, I think it, and that's, I think it's funny what you said, but, you know, you can do it on the down low. If you're afraid that your friends will make fun of you, you can do it on the down low, but
right.
You know, before you cross the LD, you know, in an operation, you know, what would be more appropriate than taking a few minutes out, you're right, clearing your mind to make sure that, you know, that you were everywhere you're supposed to be, and that, you know, the family issues at home, that, you know, that like it or not, we're human, that come with us, and all the rest of it, all the rest of the clutter that's in there now needs to go away, and I need to get completely focused on the task at hand as we bet our lives on each other. That's probably not a bad thing to get used to or get in the habit of. And the same thing at night, you know, trying to get to sleep. It's hard because, you know, depending on what you did in your day, there's a lot of stuff in there. And I just see this as a good, and the first time I saw it, you know, I was like, well, duh, maybe somebody should have told us that and helped us with it, as opposed to trying to get everybody to come to it on their own. Chris, what's the title of your paper?
So the title is Breathing to Win Battles, How Meditation Can Make Better Marines.
Got it. All right, you'll find that. Go to the Post-Traumatic Winning tab. I'll post it in two places. I'll post it there. You'll also see it as part of this post, and I will post it also on the read board. So that's how you can see it. Let me ask you, you were in the EWS that saw post-traumatic winning on Friday. You went into the class. What did you think it was going to be? Did you have any preconceived notions, or did you just walk in there with an open mind?
No, I did not have any preconceived notions. There was a small read ahead, and it was mostly from what people are saying about the course, and I looked at that, and but I really wasn't sure what to expect. With all of that, you know, especially being into meditation and everything, I did come in with a pretty open mind, and Found it, you know, extremely impactful. You can feel it in the room. You know, when you're surrounded by 250 of your peers, and you can feel the heaviness in the room and the thinking and the realization that, man, we've probably been screwing this up for a long time, and it's about time that somebody has come in here and had an honest conversation about it. And I think that, you know, for me, I took a lot away from it, and I know that my peers did too. So I think it's great, and I hope that you guys continue to get in front of Marines, because I think it'll change the way we think and talk about post-traumatic stress.
Was there any part of the presentation that you liked more than that hit harder? Or, you know, I always say truth lands with a thud and needs no salesman, and then lie about Kanye West saying that. But yeah, I don't know that he comes up with that stuff that's that good. But anyway, it's pretty funny when I do that. I don't mind saying that. But yeah. What is there any part that resonated with you more? Obviously the meditation piece, but other than that.
Sure, yeah, the meditation piece was just good to hear, because I was waiting for it, actually.
You were?
Because I knew, well, once we started talking, I was hoping that at some point there would be, you know, whether it was meditation or just a mention like your of your commandments having a mental wellness practice, because that's key for me. And
So you're sitting in the audience, sitting there thinking, come to daddy, you said wellness, come on, I know you could do it. So you're sitting there doing that?
Not so much. I mean, it does seem like a validation point when somebody else gets up there that knows what they're talking about and says it in front of my buddies who, you know, have been looking at me.
So they've given you a tough time, so you looked at them and said, boom, bitches, take that.
No, I tried to remain as humble as possible. But
are you kidding me? I would have fed it to them.
A good friend leaned over and because when you brought it up, I was like, oh man, I should, you know, I would love for this to get more exposure, not my paper, just the meditation in general, and, right. And just to start the conversation. And my friend leaned over and he said, hey man, you got to go tell him about your paper. I was like, yeah. And I was thinking about it, and he's like, no, you need to go talk to him. So that was that was the catalyst for me going up there. And
legit.
Yeah. So I think that the best thing though was just that we got the two things you said were that it's whatever the trauma is, whatever you've experienced, it's not going away and you're not going to forget about it, and we got to talk about it. And those were the two biggest take homes for me. And I know as I was emailing you after the class with my paper, I was still trying to kind of unpack everything that we had talked about up there, and you know, I knew that it was impactful. I just wasn't quite sure how. And I ended up coming home and talking to my wife. I talked to my father. I talked to my sisters all about the class. So, I think it's a, you know, a great resource for not just anybody in the military, but just across the board.
Right. That's been one of the coolest things is to hear people say that, you know, it's the first thing. A female captain came up to me at the end of the class, and she said, I just wanted to thank you, because so often when we talk about trauma, it's always combat related PTSD. Mm-hmm. And I'm a victim of sexual assault, and this is the first thing I've ever felt that included me. And I just wanted to thank you, because I think you're such a powerful spokesman for this, and I think that helps change people's attitude about these subjects. And she said, it really needs it, and you just made me feel really included today. Thank you. And you're just like, oh man, that feels, I tell everybody in the class, like, I'm the coolest person in the room because of all these cool things that happened to me, because of the class. And, not just because I'm innately cool, which I am, but that's not the argument I make at that point of the class. But no, it's all of that. So when you hear people talk about, you know, I went home and I talked to my wife, and then I talked to my dad, and then I talked to my sisters. I mean, those are Grinch moments again. Like, these things don't stop happening to me and Gunner, yeah. And it's wonderful. But, and the thing I love most though is that it can happen to you, right? If you, these things are, It's all there on the website. Download them. If you share them with people, especially people that are hurting, and they don't, like, we live a life. I've certainly lived a life that's had trauma throughout. And it's like getting a trauma mentor or a trauma guide, and you can do it, but it really helps if you have a guide. You can find out for yourself, but that's kind of a rocky path. And so if we could all be guides for other people, the guide business is just really cool. And so it feels really good to do that. Where Chris, and again, my guest is Captain Chris Drake. He's a cyber space person. It doesn't get more secret or cool than that. What about, so you got to be a dork to have those kind of clearances. Where are you headed after EWS? Where do you go?
So I'm going to a cyber protection team, which is, yeah, there could probably spend a good 10 minutes explaining that, but it's actually in Scott Air Force Base in Southern Illinois. So actually back in the roots there near the good old Mississippi River. So yeah.
And that is what, is that a joint base or is that just a cyber base or Air Force base or what?
It is an Air Force base. There's a joint unit that are part of a joint unit that operates out of there. So I will be working. It's an all-Marine team, but working with a joint unit there, and you know, kind of getting away from the MARPAT for a little bit. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, we'll see.
Sure, the chow hall will be nice.
Nicer, no doubt. Everything will be nice. Your wife will be like, "We're going to stay purple. We're not going back to that. We're not going slumming with the Marine Corps anymore."
Exactly.
Especially if they're Air Force centric. All right. Chris, first of all, I want to thank you for doing this. When you walked up and told me about it, I was like, yes, because, you know, again, another cool thing is there's people that have done work in certain areas that they see post-traumatic winning and they're like, hey, man, I've been working on a piece of this. You're obviously further down the road than I am. Would you, you know, could I send this to you? And the answer always is absolutely yes, please. So, first of all, I hope you don't mind if in the future I give you a call and bring you back when this subject comes up and avail ourselves of your expertise. And I hope you don't mind if I pass your name along and your paper along to the guys who are developing like the app for Marine Corps fitness and the Force fitness instructors that are doing all that. I hope you don't mind if I pass that along to you and that we stay in touch as this thing continues, because I'll tell you what, it's an integral part. I know for me personally that when my blood that hates, when it gets percolating, it's a physical sensation and you've got to be able to vent that. And
absolutely.
Whether it's closing your eyes and breathing. And I kind of tell this funny story about, I used to be fairly even keeled, but now I'm not that way anymore. I'm angrier now because of my life and my experiences. And so, you know, you're in Home Depot and somebody, you know, like they don't say fuck you, but they give you the fuck you. And years ago, I'd have been like, no big deal. And I'd have walked away. Now my brain says to me, he wants you to pull his Adam's apple out. And so I say in the class, like, unless you want to have a cleanup on aisle 43 that Home Depot really doesn't want to do, but you do, then you've got to find a way to vent that. And I think the easiest way, the quickest way, and the most expeditionary way is through meditation and cross mind. So if you're not afraid to do cross mind, then maybe you should cross it for your brain. So if you'll do cross mind, I think it's just a necessary thing in life when we have to get over the name. And then when they say cross mind, what are you talking about? You're like, meditation. Don't say it out loud though. All right. It's a cyber thing. Don't say it out loud.
Yeah. You can't tell. You don't have the clearance, right?
Exactly. Only the cyber guys know about cross minds. So I'm sharing it with you on the download. So just call it meditation. That way the dopes won't do it. But anyway, so Chris, first of all, thanks for coming up on Friday and introduce yourself. And I appreciate the paper and we will stay in touch. And thanks for doing this, bud.
Absolutely. No, I really appreciate the time and love to stay in touch and help anybody that's looking for it.
All right. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.